to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Jodi. How are you? Welcome back.
Well, it's summertime, Eleni, and I just recently on a fun trip and have some more ahead of me. So it's a busy time of year.
It is. It's such a busy time of year. A good busy, but where was your most recent trip?
I met my daughter in Korea. She was there for a teen tour. She's a teenager, and we spent time together in Seoul, and it was so much fun. And I want to tell you about one thing I did in Seoul, which I've never done before.
Oh, please.
I went on a really, really strenuous hike up in the mountains to visit a Buddhist temple that's been there for like thousands of years, and it was incredible.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And just like the statement, I met my daughter in Seoul, is amazing.
It's so cool. She has, you know, an epic summer in that sense. And I love that I had a really hard workout on my vacation.
Yeah.
Love that I saw something that I've never seen before. The views were amazing. This temple was incredible. And I learned a lot about Buddhism, which I didn't know a lot about. So it was a really memorable time of my trip.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. Tell us more about what's been happening in Where Brains Meet Beauty podcast land.
Oh my God, so much fun. We just had our Q3 listening party, and the theme was career capital, voices in finance and investing. It brought together so many incredible leaders in the finance side of the business. So that's PE people, individual investors, the lawyers, the consultants, investment bankers that make all deals happen. It was so much fun.
It was, I feel like I say this every time, but it was probably one of my favorite quarters and themes that we've done. I felt like I learned so many new things. And these are like those true behind the scenes for my perspective careers that I don't get to hear about every day. And for our audience who hears from so many amazing leaders in the beauty space, this was just such a cool, different group of people to hear from. So yeah. Loved that.
It was the first time we had this theme on our show, and it's been 8 years of the show, so it's long overdue. And we're so pleased that the Beauty Connect series was our partner on this event and for this theme. And we go to their events all the time. So I love that they're part of this.
Yeah, it was amazing. Thank you, Beauty Connect. So first up in today's episode, we have Catherine Eckevand and Lindy Furstenberg from Alex Partners.
Oh, these women are so inspiring. And they talk about how they help luxury brands transform their businesses. Like when we're talking about transformation, not just marketing, like the entire business, it's huge Herculean things that they do over there at Alex Partners. And we talked a lot about the importance of strategic acquisitions, maintaining brand magic after a transaction, a lot of really juicy stuff.
Yeah, it was amazing. You could really sense that they both had such a deep curiosity and passion for the industry and really dig into the data, which we love at Base Beauty as well.
I love these two women. They're so inspiring. And interestingly, they both wanted to be astronauts when they were kids. So we had a lot of fun during our conversation about that and also a fun game at the end.
Yeah, so much fun seeing how childhood dreams shape career paths. This is one of our favorite questions on the show. So let's hear more from our two guests, Catherine Eckevand and Lindy Furstenberg, in episode 289.
Hey, beauty founders, brand builders, and industry insiders. Are you ready to level up?
Our friends at Kosako are back for the 9th annual edition of Beauty Connect. It is happening November 3rd through the 5th at the gorgeous Fairmont Century Plaza in Los Angeles.
Beauty Connect is the industry's go-to problem-solving platform. Our COO, Sarah Lavalley, will be joining this year for Base Beauty.
You'll also be surrounded by some of your favorite brands, Supergoop, House Labs, L'Occitane, Nordstrom, Bloomingdale's, and Beekman 1802.
We're talking curated one-on-one meetings, a luxe gift bag, intimate closed-door dinners with retailers, investors, and your sharpest peers.
Head to beautyconnectla.com and use our code WBMB for 10% off your ticket.
Let us know if you'll be attending. Your next big break could be in that room. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We're talking all things luxury beauty consulting. Next to me are Lindy Furstenberg, Senior Vice President, Beauty and Luxury at Alex Partners, and Catherine Eckevand, Partner at Alex Partners. Thank you so much for being here. This is so fun.
I love it.
Thank you for having us.
So for the people who are not in the room with us right now, it's 9 a.m. You're the first episode of 6 today for our theme, Career Capital, Voices in Finance and Investing. And since we're a career journey show, we're going to start at the very beginning. We're going to talk about your dreams. What do you want to be when you grow up? So Lindy, we'll start with you. What was your dream at like 12 years old?
I think we have the same one, but I wanted to be an astronaut and my growth was stunted. So it was very stressful and I never quite made it to the requirement of 5'3". So it was a dream that died due to height, but it was amazing.
I was wanting to be always an astronaut too, But I realized that that's not very realistic. I was born in Tehran, grew up between Tehran and Paris. So making it to NASA was rather far. So I decided to become a petroleum engineer instead.
A petroleum engineer instead. Okay. Yes. So
why not?
So thank you for the transition to first jobs. Is that the first job you started with? That was your path in school?
Yes. So I started as a petroleum engineer and then I transitioned now to be a strategist. What remained constant was more of my problem solving skills and really seeing through complexities, and then going from one extreme of working on oil rigs in jungles and deserts to luxury brands like Tiffany and Louis Vuitton, and now here at Alex Partners.
So we're going to come back to all the places you've lived and worked, but Lindy, what was your first job out of school?
NASA. I was part of their co-op program, but never hit the height requirement, and it was not a cultural fit. I was not destined to be there, but it was absolutely epic.
So what does a job in that program look like?
Oh my gosh. My job, especially early on, was testing mechanisms for spaceships and for satellites. And so I was part of the testing team. And so it was very loud, a lot of vibrations. That's pretty cool.
And that's an engineering role?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have two engineers sitting in front of me. We're now working with the biggest beauty brands in the world, helping them build their businesses effectively. Okay, so this sounds like a pretty big leap. Right?
Yeah, we had a curveball or two, for sure.
Okay, so Catherine, let's go back in time, because the job in petroleum is quite fascinating. I've known a lot of people through the years, and they tell me the list of all the places they've lived and worked. So yes. Go for it.
So my first job was in jungles of Chad, literally middle of nowhere in Chad. I worked there for a year. We would stay in campus inside the jungles, 1 hour from...
So you'd stay in a campsite?
Yes. 1 hour, literally middle of jungles, mm-hmm. 1 hour flight from N'Djamena, the capital of Chad. That was the first one. Then I moved to Oman. I was there for 4 years, living in deserts, middle of deserts, 4 hours drive from the capital, Muscat. But again, all these places, I would come back home. I wouldn't stay jungles for a year. I would do 4 weeks on, 4 weeks off, or 6 weeks on, 3 weeks off. Then I moved to Abu Dhabi, and then Norway. Bergen, Norway, the rainiest city on earth, and then back to Paris for 7 years, and then Houston, and then New York.
Okay. And how many places have you lived and worked, Lindy?
New York. One. I, after the NASA crisis, personal crisis, I went to school. I got my first master's at Columbia in organizational psychology, just trying to do the exact opposite, try something new. And when I was there, I met an amazing woman who worked at Louis Vuitton, and she convinced me to transition my school to night school and come work for her during the day.
And that's what you did?
And that's what I did.
And what was that role?
It was really cool. It was an internal consulting role, so I did a bunch of different things. But when I was there, I helped launch their fragrance line, which was what totally sparked my passion, love, joy for beauty, and haven't really looked back.
So, Catherine, how did you get out of petroleum and into luxury?
So, I did my MBA in HEC Paris, although I focused on innovation and entrepreneurship at the time, there was a luxury track. And also, being French and understanding the culture, and luxury culture is very strong in France, that kind of piqued my interest. And when I moved to New York and decided to pivot from oil and gas to something more interesting, I applied for Tiffany and they hired me. But I think it was my, one, global skills, because the job that I had was basically helping with the global store development at Tiffany. One was my global understanding of the global footprint and the different culture. But what it really helped me to kind of pivot transform into kind of a luxury world was understanding the cool down cultures. That I think is, I call it my superpower, to be able to go in different places and understand the culture and stay true to who I am as a person and kind of to my true DNA. And I it's the same thing that you have with brands. I can take the brands in different places and adapt to the the different cultures and different geography while helping the brand to stay true to themselves, to the DNA of the brand and not losing the magic. And this is somehow what we do at Alex Partners as well.
There's so much overlap between the two of you. You both were little kids.
We were destined to be together.
And then you both worked at Louis Vuitton and then at Tiffany, not at the same time. Yes. But you both had
a lot of similar girlfriends. A lot of girlfriend overlap from those places.
So what's fascinating about the conversations I have on the show, and we're nearing almost 300 episodes, I've had a lot of, I've asked this question a lot, is that sometimes I can see a direct correlation between that 12-year-old career dream and what people are doing now, even if it doesn't seem direct, sometimes like underlying. Like, what do you think is the same of that dream of astronaut and what you thought that would mean to you and what you're doing now? Lindy, we can start with you.
I'm actually curious. I think we're going to say something pretty similar. I think we're dreamers. We still are, just in a very different way. I'm deeply curious. When I get a bug about something, I will go into the largest, deepest hole that I will have to get clawed out by my husband or by my friends. And so it's a deep curiosity. It's also a reverence. And I think that when you want to be an astronaut, there's such an incredible reverence for space and for universe and what it could mean and the mystique around it. And you have the same for beauty brands. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but it's a curiosity, it's a reverence. And there is a bit of a magic of the je ne sais quoi. What is possible? What is out there? What could we possibly dream of that could be a little bit different and bring people a little bit more soulful? And so it's so funny. I've actually never thought about that, but I think that might be what it is.
Catherine, what is it for you?
A very similar way, sense of discovery and adventure.
You are an adventurer. Yeah. Oh my God, that's more Catherine than me.
Sense of discovery, adventure, and really getting beneath the question that a lot of people have and can't answer. You know, growing up, one of my favorite books was a series of books, Tell Me Why. And every book would tell you about the topic. One was on astronomy, one was on animals, etc. And that kind of helped me expand in terms of like understanding the world and sense of adventure and discoveries. I think that was what was driving it. And if you think about it, in oil and gas was the same thing. I was literally doing this oil discovery. So I think that sense of adventure and discovery was the driver, and I still have it till today, discovering brands and their potentials and helping the investors getting the understanding the potential of the brand and discover the brand. So I think that's what has been kind of the through line across all my careers up to today.
When you're in oil and gas, you're exploring what's underneath.
Yes.
And when you're in space, exactly, you're exploring, right? So that is really interesting too, that you started your career that way. So you actually were the mirror image of
space.
Right,
exactly.
Space. So let's.
And I was wearing suits, right?
So you know, just
Jesus,
like not
a different
suit.
Kind of suit.
Yes, exactly.
What's so interesting to me about all this and your rich engineering backgrounds and like working at NASA, I'm sure you're working at like the top oil and gas producers. You're both so glamorous. Every time I see you, I'm like, wow, like these are people who really love this. Like, this is who you are. Were you that way in these jobs at NASA in the gas fields where you're I can't
disaster.
Be my full self because I need glamour?
No, I was my full self, and that was the issue. I remember my first, so I did the co-op program, so it was like during a school, and I came home to my parents for the first time, and I told them this was my first day there. It's like, I can't work here. They're like, what's wrong? And I was like, their jeans are horrible. Like, I just like couldn't understand how all these brilliant people were in like ripped t-shirts, flip-flops, and denim that was like 500 years old. And I remember I would show up in my little suit, and I was totally stuck out like a sore thumb. But it was, I think you just have to be yourself, though. Like, unapologetically, and you're going to find the right path. You're going to find the right place. And sometimes it's a cultural fit. Sometimes it's not. But I think if you're your own guiding light, then you're going to figure it out.
Absolutely.
What did you wear on the rigs?
Well, I had to wear
a uniform,
the
right?
Coverall. We used to call
it coverall.
Yeah, we call it coveralls. And safety
a hard hat.
Yeah. Hard hat.
Ooh, those are cute, though.
Yeah. And one complaint that we had at the time was the coverall were basically made for men, were not made for engineers. And this was one of the things that we brought up, that the coveralls, the shape of coveralls is not for female bodies.
Right.
So, but kind of going back to your question and staying true, absolutely. Like, I would carry my beauty kit with me even on the rigs. And I remember, like, I had all this, you know, the fresh towels and inside the unit, so because it's very messy outside, I had that. I was like doing my nails. Like,
you I had my vanity.
Like, I was taking the kit with me, especially because in the middle of jungles, you can't find them. Like, you have to make sure you take enough supply. And I think part of that, obviously, was staying true to who I am. And part of that was a bit of rebellion of, yes, I'm a woman and I'm on a rig in the middle of jungles and or middle of deserts. I remember working in deserts in Oman. I had my pony coming out of my hard hat and a bunch of guys in a car, they drove by to stop. They reversed to kind of double check if I was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of that, it was like, yes, I'm capable. And we used to get, it got better by time, but we used to get a bit of reaction from people on the rig. Oh, you sent me a girl engineer. And we, all of us, proved that if not same, we are much better than the, if not better than the guys, because same service and we are even better engineers. So there was a bit of that that I wanted to say, yes, I'm here, I'm a woman, I'm very proud of it.
Awesome. So let's switch gears to the world that you're all in now. I had not heard of Alex Partners before I met you, right? So can you just explain, because this is like a kind of an unusual business within our world. Explain to me, Catherine, what is Alex Partners?
So Alex Partners is a consulting firm. We are around 41 years old. We started as a restructuring firm, helping to companies through bankruptcy. And then now we have expanded much more to advisory. We help the companies through their transformations across different industries. Our retail practice and customer practice, where the beauty falls into, is one of our two of our strongest practices. We have a very strong aviation practice, automotive, hospitality as well, and then our luxury goes across. We also, if you think about it, we are organized in a matrix. So we have industries as vertical lines, and then we have our solution teams that are horizontal. Kind of think about it in a horizontal line. Of some of our team are focusing on growth, on AI and digital transformation, org transformation, operation, etc.
So, Lindy, let's talk about how the skills that you were, you know, building through the years and all the different jobs, how do those come to life when you're helping a business transform? And these are big businesses, right? These are global businesses, a lot of moving parts.
The bigger, the more complicated, obviously. And I think that what we do that's a bit different is we don't rush in with any sort of solution. It's we're so deeply curious in everything we do. And I think the first few weeks or the introduction to a company, an individual, a project, like, you're quiet, you listen, you ask a lot of questions, and you digest absolutely everything, and you come in with no preconceived notions. And then you take all of that curiosity, all of that questioning, and then you marry it with insane data analytics that I'm super proud that we've developed. And so I think that's really our magic. But what we do so differently is we really get to know the client in a way that we understand their heritage, because especially with these larger firms, they've really deviated over time. As they've gone through M&A, as they've gone through transformations or whatever it may be. And so understanding the roots, understanding and dissecting, like, what is the magic, what makes this so special and so unique and one of one, can actually be really hard over time because it's been layered by different cultures, different times, different brands. And so I think that's what we do that's a bit different and something we're really proud of.
And what enables that magic is the fact that most of our people, they have industry experience. So we bring that lens of
practicality
and being on the other side of the table, really understanding how it works and the complexity of it, all of that. So that is what enables us to be very effective with these brands and understanding the different cultures and companies. And again, going back to sense of discovery. So discovering what are the strength of those companies and how we can help them leverage that.
So the whole finance side of this world was very new to me when I started my business. So I started Base Beauty 18 years ago, and I didn't even know like all the stuff existed, right? I didn't know anything about PE and investment banking and transformation organizations. And it was actually Alana Zeifer who like sat me down and taught me this. She and I went to the same gym, and she'll be here later today
to say hi.
So like she actually sat me down. She's like, this is what a PE firm is. Yeah. This is what an investment banker does. So, you know, it's really exciting for me today to bring this theme to our listeners, because it's just a side of the business that's essential, right? Like if there is not money in the bank, businesses cannot operate. But you have businesses coming to you that are very, very well known, right? Probably have, you know, sometimes decades and decades in market, and they're just not making money anymore. They're not growing, right? So you see a side of the world of the brand that the consumer doesn't get to see, right? If it's on the shelf, you know, at CVS, the consumer thinks this is a big business. It's strong, it's powerful, it's healthy, but you see the other side. So these brands come to you, like I would imagine, pretty desperate for change, but change is not just about marketing solutions, it's about supply chain, it's about how they're organized, right? So like, how do you peel apart every single little aspect of a giant global business to try to find the root of the challenges? You can start with you, Lindy.
Well, I think it's almost before you get there, taking a step back, because we do... We're leaders in transformation. We transform these global conglomerates. But also what we do is we work with growth equity and private equity. And also what we do is I'm an angel investor for beauty, health, and wellness on the side. And Catherine mentors in the space. And so we're so ingrained in the entire ecosystem, from indie brands to conglomerates, from venture to private equity. And everywhere in between. And it's one of those insanely intermingled, really messy ecosystems that if you only understand one facet, you're going to miss the rest of the pictures. And the same thing with the retailers. You have to understand the mono retailers, the specialty, the mass. It's so complicated. And we wrap somehow our hands around the entire thing. And so in order to be able to do that, we have to service a total variety of clients. And so a big portion of our business is private equity. A big portion is helping them figure out, are these the right assets to invest in, to acquire? How do you want to transform their value? How do you want to go ahead and prepare them for sale? But then also, oh wait, this is cyclical. Let's start to look at what new assets could be for the portfolio and how it works. And that really helps us also understand how to help the strategics, because that's an exit opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so it's so complicated and so mixed, and what we have like the incredible privilege of is to be able to work in every single facet of this ecosystem, which allows us the know-how and the prowess to be able to see and kind of game theory it about how these players should maneuver. Because if you're looking at a strategic in isolation, there's no way in hell you're going to figure it out and how to crack the code. And so it's the whole ecosystem that gives you that dynamicism and that picture to be able to solve for what's going on.
So Catherine, every day we read about brands who might have been amazing stars, then they were acquired by a global strategic, and it's a few years later, and they're like down in the dumps, right?
Everyone's worst fear.
Right, sales slumping, the brand doesn't mean anything, it's not relevant, they don't have loyalty. So let's say that business comes to you and the strategic who owns it has been around for 80 years, right, whatever. How many people are on your team working to pull apart all the challenges and put it back together? Like, is this like a giant operation?
Great question. Absolutely. So the way it works is we typically, have an approach, we call it a quickest strike. Quickest strike is kind of a very fast, as you can tell from the name, 4 to 6 weeks of diagnostics. We have teams in that they have expertise across different facets of the business, from marketing to operation to cost to org. Every one of us really gets deep into every facet of that, and then we bring back together all of the all of our findings, right, and brainstorm and come back to the company with a list of priorities of what is needed, opportunities in terms of sizing the opportunity, and kind of think about the growth. And what is my core expertise and mission in life is helping these brands to grow without losing their magics. And sometimes when they are acquired by strategics or some of the investment firms, they lose their magic, right? Like if you push too much on cost or operational efficiency, you might lose your magic. And this is basically what my focus is and my expertise in is. So once we do that kind of diagnostic phase, then we have a planning and design phase that we sit down with the brand, we sit down with our client and look at the priorities, look at where they want to be in the next 3 to 5 years, what is their exit plan. Based on that, we design a program that helping them to grow and helping them to come back to their roots and wherever the problem exists. It could be in their marketing effectiveness. We find these days a lot of brands, they kind of lost who the target audience was. Everybody is after Gen Z, but this is not, your brand was not created for Gen Z. So you have to really think about all of those aspects and then design a program that works and help you grow. And if you think about it, we look at the opportunities for growth and then we decide on the power lane that they really need to push on and then execute on that.
You mentioned brands losing their magic, and we see all the time in social listening that when a brand who's loved announces, "I was sold to so-and-so," like fans start panicking, right? Yeah. You're going to change the formulas, the quality's not going to be as good, you're going to, you know, increase your prices. So is this part of the conversation when you're involved in the deal? I'll give this question to you. When you're involved in a transaction, like how do you help a business prepare for the negative side or negative reaction from fans?
Of course. And what I will say, even just taking a step back, is I really believe in the power of markets correcting themselves naturally. And right now, you can see in the market at large, the strategics are struggling, likely due to some of these issues we're talking about. And there's a rise of these nouveau strategics, these new strategics. You're thinking about Waldencast, you're thinking about Mesa. There are a number of kind of budding new strategics that are doing things very differently. And so I believe in the power of kind of course correction from the market perspective. And I think we're seeing that live right now, which is really cool and maybe a bit overdue. But how you prepare your brands during this process is first of all, depending on who our client is, but it's really about choosing the right investor, choosing the right strategic. Because if you have that perfect match, it actually is much smoother. But a lot of it is actually to support the strategic side in terms of M&A integration. What we see here is so often, from a strategic standpoint, it really breaks down in terms of the integration process. And so how can we help them better integrate from a realistic standpoint? You're not going to have all these synergies you thought you were going to have 5-10 years ago. It's just not, you're going to kill the brand if you do all of this.
When you say synergies, you mean like
cost synergies, right, like people synergy. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it's back to kind of what we talk about incessantly, which I just love. Like, what is the magic of this brand? What makes it so special, so important in their unique place in the market? And then what are the points where you actually have a little bit of wiggle room? So how can you preserve and protect the magic in the most like fortress-like way? Mm-hmm. And then what spaces actually don't matter as much. And I mean, we've had brands where packaging is absolutely destroying their margin and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, we will find other places to figure this out and to solve for whatever financial necessity has to be achieved, but we're not touching that freaking packaging, right? And so that's like a silly example, but you can kind of visualize that and it really helps to crystallize. Like, where do you fortress and then what flows a little bit more?
I just want to go into something you just mentioned, Lindy. Yeah. You mentioned like course correction in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So does that mean these giant behemoth global strategics will like break themselves into pieces to better compete? Like, what does that look like?
Aggressive but potential reaction, right? Mm-hmm. Some of these strategics are really considering what is in their portfolio. So yes, that could potentially happen. They might be thinking about their portfolios. They might be there. I mean, there are a number of things that we're working with strategics on.
If you're this like 100-year-old business that's global that owns 100 brands and I don't know, laundry and beauty and snack food or whatever. Like, is there a course correction to actually like become smaller businesses in a sense?
You know, it's really, okay. So that's an amazing question because they're all public, and so they all have an investor community that they have to kind of create value for. And so knowing that, it's such an individual exercise. Is the best way to get value to sell assets? Is the best way to get value to reconceptualize how you're structured? Is the best way to get value? Maybe you have to do some sort of cost exercises. Like there's a number of different ways that you can do it, but each situation is a lot more unique. Do I think that there's going to be an asset sale? Potentially, probably, at some point. Or they're going to restructure and they're going to have different kind of reporting lines, different business units and different approaches. So it's fun because they're all going through this at the same time and they're taking and this is different, your business. And they're taking different responses.
I would kind of build on that. Being a conglomerate strategic, it's a really complex job because you have to make sure every brand stays true to themselves and their strength, but at the same time, you need that kind of leverage on the size, and it's really complex to decide where you want to leverage the size and where you want them to truly stay independent and true to their brand promise. So it's a very complex world, and also I think every brand, every company, every conglomerate, they need to decide on this. Like we have a framework that we use to say you have to be able to dominate in one thing, right? Differentiate in another, and then you can be on par on the rest. So every conglomerate, every brand, every company needs to decide what they are dominating it, right? And if for some brands is in terms of access, convenience, for some is kind of their globalness, but for a luxury brand, quality is something that you cannot obviously sacrifice. But every single company and brand, they need to decide where they are dominating. Where, and if that, in the case of conglomerate, one of their brand is not helping that domination or differentiation, then maybe they can exit and find a better replacement. So the kind of thinking from that lens would help them to decide if they have to divest or they kind of change their portfolio.
I'm wildly fascinated by this topic and I won't spend more time on the show here. So I'll find you offline because we work with so many types of businesses, a lot of PE owned, but also global strategic owned. Yeah. And we can see as outsiders working in the business how often the team running a brand doesn't actually have like control of the brand. It's almost like
The $1 million question is who actually
right there's control. Like there's a reverence to the strategic's way of thinking and they sort of forget about the end user customer, right? They're just kind of forgetting about the basics. And that's I think the pressures from the organizations and people just wanting to like not get fired, you know, at like the end of the day they're just trying to survive.
But there's so much pressure depending on the valuation that these assets are purchased at, right?
Right.
And so if we're talking about assets of strategics today, they were likely purchased at a valuation that just doesn't exist today, right? And so there's so much pressure to get more juice from the squeeze and to figure out how, you know, this core. I hate the word synergies. I know it's so not consulting of me, but how you figure out how to get a return on your investment. And I think the approach that is taken with brands that exist in some of these strategic portfolios today is going to look very different when you're buying an asset earlier in its life cycle and at a valuation that's about half the price.
Let's switch gears, but I will find you both afterwards to talk about this.
Talk about this forever.
Let's talk about leadership style, right? So you have these incredibly diverse backgrounds. You bring them to this world of luxury consulting. Catherine, we'll start with you. You know, you're leading for your clients, but you're also leading this team of very diverse experts, right? You probably have supply chain experts, legal experts, accounting experts, all the experts. So what is your leadership style in this organization and how do you make that work for both of these parties?
We have some of our best team members in the audience today.
Yay. Hi, everybody. Thank you for showing up.
Anybody that works with us has a magic. And for me, one of the skills that I have is spotting that skills and magic in every person and bring that to life. And my job as a leader is to give them the platform that they need to bring on their magic. And also, I really enjoy the kind of the brainstorming part of our business. Mm-hmm. So I would say very democratic style in that sense, and making sure everybody, they have their voice and they can express their point of view. So our organization is relatively flat. Everybody has a voice that matters to us and is important to bring that to life. And again, to make sure that when we look at this brand, when we look at to helping our client, we look at every aspect of it, right? I really truly believe in diversity and across every angle of diversity, diversity of backgrounds, thoughts. So that is very important to me, and I want to make sure that I hear everybody on the team and make sure that the point of view is taken into the consideration.
And Lindy, what's your leadership style in the organization?
I tend to think that organizations are a casing of humans, just like a body is a casing of cells. And so, we're a casing of energy. Mm-hmm. Humans are a casing just of cells. And so, and organizations is the same thing. Like it radiates out of these organizations, the people that are in it. And so, I think that in order to kind of bring the best out of everyone, two things have to be true. They have to feel valued and they have to feel like humans. And I think taking the time to actually do the little things, recognizing what's going well, recognizing people's superpower. I mean, I'm looking at Naomi out there. We are having a conversation, and with Abby, we're like, what is your superpower? How can we amplify it? How can we dig into it? So that's the valued part. And then the human part is, especially in this today's day and age, we have so many needs, so many demands on our time. I'm 18 months into remission. I'm constantly at the doctor. Like, we just need to be seen for our humanness and have whatever comes of it that means, whether it's a safe space, whether it's flexibility, whether it's, you know, bringing a new side of you to the office, whatever feels authentic. And so I think that to create a space where you can feel valued in your superpower and really learn how to amplify that light and then feel like a human in whatever form that means, that brings authenticity, that brings a desire to really perform and to be your best. And so I think those things really elicit the best of our team. And we have the sickest team ever. They're absolutely amazing. And so to bring out the best of them is, it really creates magic.
I love this conversation. I have more I want to dip into offline. Before we move into our next phase of the show, which is our game, I just want to shout out to Libra, who's the person who introduced us.
I know, she couldn't be with us this morning, but she's amazing.
So we met Libra a few years ago at a procurement conference. Does that sound sexy? And she introduced us, and I'm so glad that you were here to start our show. So let's move into our game, okay?
Amazing.
Okay, I love so the game is called Beauty in Zero Gravity.
Oh my god.
As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, you both want to be astronauts as kids. So we thought we'd play a quick game of imagining you were heading on a mission to space, but you can only bring 4 beauty products each. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you had to do this basically.
Oh my god.
On the rig.
So you're prepared.
You have limited space, pun intended. So you're gonna be selective and strategic about your choices. And you have 6 months in space. There's no gravity, no glam squad, limited room in your kit. Okay, so we're going to give you a this or that choices, and you're going to have to let us know what's going to be in your kit.
Okay.
And this is no brand names. Okay. So the first topic is skincare survival. Are you bringing a rich, hydrating moisturizer or a gentle all-in-one cleanser? Lindy, we'll start with you.
Moisturizer. It's very dry in space. Mm-hmm. Oh my god. Not even. No brainer.
100%.
Okay.
Moisturizer.
Yeah, 100%. Although cleanser, because, you know, it is a little dirty.
Maybe you can bring the moisturizer.
I'll bring you bring the cleanser. I mean, space is getting a little gritty.
dust. We share.
I love really, really rich moisturizer. I have very thirsty skin.
I do too.
And I often layer it on and then layer it on again.
I do the same thing. Yeah. Like, give it a few minutes to soak in and then just slap
and it soaks
on
in so fast.
I know.
Okay, number 2 topic, space glam. Are you going to bring a multi-purpose cream blush / lip tint, so like an all-in-one kind of, or a lengthening waterproof mascara? We'll start with you, Catherine.
Mascara.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, no, I want the tint. I want to look like, you know, fresh pinched cheeks while on the moon, just like natural glow kind of energy. Yeah, no.
And why mascara for you?
Your eyes are like, boom.
Like, I love mascara. It makes you look like you're awake. Mm-hmm. More power.
Catherine wants to look awake
like,
on Mars.
I have to debate over red lipstick or mascara, okay. But I would say mascara first and then red lipstick.
So if you only have like a second to leave the house, it's mascara you're choosing?
Crazy. That's a crazy choice.
Okay, number three, self-care essentials. Are you bringing a jade roller for puffiness and circulation or a travel-size red light therapy mask?
Red light
therapy. I have melasma. I can't do the red light therapy
mask. Okay, so Catherine said red light mask.
Yes.
Why is that?
It's more effective. And I could do the thing with my hand, right? Like
self-massage. Yeah. So you're going to massage your face with your fingers, which are free. We're
using the moisturizer. Right. And
okay, and then you're going to bring the therapy mask. You're not using the therapy mask.
No, but I have melasma. I can't do that. But I love, I think the jade, the crystal, the energy that you get from it, and it's maybe less of a concern. There's not as much gravity. Maybe I bring the red light mask for the rest. No, I don't think we're puffy in space.
Okay.
I think maybe I bring the mask for like my décolleté or something. Okay. Yeah.
And last topic, hair care survival. Are you bringing dry shampoo or a silk hair wrap? And then we'll start with you.
I'm really trying to extend my shower, like my shampoo session, so dry shampoo.
Yeah, I would go with that too. Yes.
Do you think that our hair gets greasy in space?
I don't think so.
No, it's really dry.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe we need the silk mask.
The silk hair wrap?
The silk hair wrap. Yeah. I think I'm going to go. I actually wear it oftentimes to bed, so
maybe we keep that going. Yeah.
Okay, so now we know. You can pack your bags.
Ready. One thing we both love are the sheet masks.
Oh, my God. We love a sheet mask.
You got to put that in
there. You do love a sheet mask.
Yeah,
love a sheet mask. I'm going to sneak in one of those.
Like, Catherine, so we speak 24/7, and typically after 8 p.m., whenever she calls me, I'll have a mask on, and it changes almost every night.
I have one morning.
But I do a sheet mask very often. I do Zooms in a face mask, which I'm realizing I should publicize.
I put them in the fridge, and I put them cold on after my shower.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a nice touch.
Yeah.
I really like a mud mask, like a clay mask, like the Borghese Mondo. If I look busted, like if I've had a really late night or a really long flight and I put this on, I look normal. That's incredible, the power of these products.
I'm a soothing. I'm a big soother. Anything for the rosacea, just calm it. Every night, Naomi knows, if we're on after 8 p.m., I have my mask on.
Okay, so now there's one last piece of the game. It's open-ended. What product would you invent for astronauts if NASA hired you for beauty R&D?
Oh, okay. I think I have mine.
A skincare.
What your beauty R&D could be anything.
I think you can you age in a space, so I would say anti-aging face cream.
Okay.
I would go with that.
Yeah, I was gonna say toning because of the depending on what planet you're on, I'm assuming a low gravity planet. And so if you're just hanging out on the moon, like your muscles are gonna atrophy. It's gonna be a really big problem. So I think anything that will maybe even Ozempic type situation, like an Ozempic face, but for my entire body.
Oh, so a muscle stimulation for your face muscles?
My whole body. Your whole body muscles, right. Atrophies mm-hmm. in space. Now, it's going to be really ugly when you go back.
Yeah.
It's going to be really bad. Yeah.
But also, you might need sunscreen too.
Oh, God. We need a superpower. So I just learned sunscreen really only lasts for 90 minutes. I feel hoodwinked.
Yeah.
So I'm very upset. So a sunscreen that lasts for at least several hours.
We're having, we're combating muscle atrophy with some sort of zing, 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 over muscles.
Little yummy thing.
A sunscreen that's equal in weight to a spacesuit's powers.
I think so.
Okay. Anything else are we inventing? Oh, you add super hydrating moisturizer.
Super hydrating moisturizer is part of the whole franchise of anti-aging, hydrating, all of that.
I think we need also, so my husband gives me foot rubs, so I think we need like a better foot massager than what's in the market today, because the ones in the market today are kind of mid.
Okay, so you need that in space.
Yeah. Okay. No, it'll soothe me. Okay. It'll make me calm and happy inside.
Well, that takes us to the end of our show. Thank you so much, ladies.
This
Thank
was
you
so
all.
Fun. Thank you.
Thanks, Jody.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.